Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside JJ Cooper.
Hello!
We're here to talk about the Royals system today. JJ was the longtime author of the Kansas City Royals Farm System Rankings. This year we handed them off to Bill.
I believe it was a decade.
And a good decade it was. Yeah. This year we handed it off to the great Bill Mitchell. But we're here having JJ analyze the system as a whole just because he's still the Royals expert in our hearts. And forever.
I do enjoy still keeping, you know, a very close eye on the Royals. It did help edit this, so feel comfortable talking Royals today.
You know, this was obviously a team that built from the ground up, got their core, got them to a couple World Series. That era has apparently come to an end, although they might apparently still make a move to bring Eric Hosmer back.
Which does puzzle me. I mean, they made a trade last night. They traded... We're recording this on
the day after the Brandon Tuesday. Moss trade.
So Brandon Moss, Ryan Butcher, and they bring back
Buchter.
Bring back Jesse Hahn and Heath Philmeyer.
Yep.
So which Philmeyer would slot in on the he is still prospect eligible, the lone prospect in this trade, but. While you talk, I will kind of
Well, we already saw one guy slide in. Trevor Oakes, who was acquired earlier this year, slots in at number eight, ahead of Hunter Dozier and Foster Griffin, but just below Nicky Lopez. And look, the Royals are adding some pitching. We saw they needed it in terms of just everything that went wrong last year. Ian Kennedy, Jason Hamill did not work out. The death of Yordano Ventura, obviously, was something that's tough to overcome both on and off the field. So they're adding arms, which is something they need.
I'll put it this way. Philmeyer would, at the latest, he would rank as 17th on the 17th, 18th on the system. We have our prospect handbooks coming out very, very soon. Good reminder, if you haven't ordered it yet, baseballamerica.com/store, you can order your prospect handbook. But giving you a little sneak peek, Heath Philmeyer, who was going to be 18th in the A's system, is going to slot somewhere between 16, would slot. Obviously, we're not republishing them for this trade, but that would be a little rash. But he would slot somewhere between 16 and 17 in the Royals system.
So, JJ, pre-Trevor Oakes, or post-Trevor Oakes, it was pre-Trevor Oakes trade as well mm-hmm. as a pre-Heath Philmeyer trade. This Royals system was ranked as one of the worst in baseball, the second worst in baseball.
And these trades, they stay at 29th. Trevor Oakes and Heath Philmeyer do not change that ranking.
So, obviously, that ranking alone tells you this is not a good system.
No top 100 prospect right now.
Just what's your overall view of why they're 29th, what's gone wrong in that sense? Because even though, look, when you win World Series and you're contending, you get lower draft picks, but even the ones they've had.
And they did trade away also, but... Now, to be fair, most of the guys they traded away at this point, you know, are big leaguers. Sean Manaea would not be changing this ranking. He's
graduated. Brandon Finnegan, Cody Reed. And these guys, in a lot of cases, were worth it because they got you Johnny Cueto, they got you Ben Zobrist. You don't win the World Series without those guys. But even with that,
guys were valuable enough to do that at the time. But yes, right now, you look at it.
And the Royals have had, I think, one of the biggest issues, just their struggles to backfill it. They have not hit on their first-round picks at all recently. You go back and look at your last couple, Nolan Watson, Ash Russell. You know, look, Chase Fellow might, you know, get a little better. Foster Griffin is a top-10 prospect. You know, Finnegan, Manaea, you know, but Dozier, Zimmer, Starling. I mean, really since 2011, they've got two.
2000, and then you got Colon, I would say.
2010, and he helped, but it
but
was,
no, but
you, but it was
fourth
not.
Fourth overall, you're that's you, not you. That's a bad pick.
Right. Aaron Crow, who had one All-Star season.
Right.
And then you get it before that, 08, then you get Mike Montgomery, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Alex Gordon, Luke Hilhoshaver. It's been a rough go draft-wise, and I feel like it's just too much to overcome, and that's a big reason why this system is as low as it is.
I think you look at this system right now, and I do think that there's a very high likelihood that they'll be significantly better a year from now than they are now. And the reason I say that is as far as our rankings, for two things. One, I really do like their 2017 draft. Now, their 2017 draft, none of them jump right into the top 100, but if you told me, if Nick Prado goes out and has a really good year in the Midwest League, if MJ Melendez goes out, who was one of the better high school catchers in the draft class, who had a really, you know, had a very solid first season in pro ball, half season. But if he goes out, does the same thing in the Midwest League. If Sulley Matthias, you know, they have guys who, Khalil Lee, you know, those guys all are guys who have some ceiling to them. And now when I just listed off, you know, four or five of them, and that doesn't mean that you should expect as a Royal fan that all four or five will do that. But if one, two, or three of that do that, these are all guys who have the tools to be top 100 prospects. So you'll have that. You have on top of that that they're again going to be, you know, they're now at the point where they're drafting higher, assuming, and this right now, we know that Lorenzo Cain, they know they're getting an extra pick, you know, for Lorenzo Cain. But we don't know yet, theoretically, we assume that they're going to get another pick for Mike Moustakas. We would assume if they don't sign Eric Hosmer, they'll get a pick for Eric Hosmer. But so they're now in the accumulation phase of the rebuild. Now, as we just said, though, they're starting at the ground floor on this rebuild. Now, when I said about Hosmer, the thing where I don't, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me is that everyone now talks about, for right or wrong, the worst place in baseball to be is in the 75 win range. The point being, there's no benefit to winning 75 games. This is an organization that still has Salvador Perez there, you know, locked up long term. They did just bring Alcides Escobar back. So theoretically, they could end up bringing back, if they did sign Hosmer, they would have, you know, essentially three, and Alex Gordon is still there for a couple more years on an extension he signed a couple years ago. So they could end up having Perez, Hosmer, Escobar, and Gordon from their World Series team still there. But that's not going to get them back to the playoffs. Right? Re-signing Eric Hosmer is not going to help them get back to the playoffs. And as I see it, looking at it from the outside, I don't think that Eric Hosmer is going to be at his peak. I think this is going to be a multiple-year rebuild, a several-year rebuild. The last time, I mean, they're in better shape than they were when Dayton Moore arrived. But, you know, this is not something where logically to me this is a team contending in 2020. And then that leads to the question of, okay, is Eric Hosmer still could be a useful player, but is Eric Hosmer going to be are you going to basically, if you re-sign Eric Hosmer, are you, depending on the deal, we obviously don't know what the deal is, but you know, if it's a 7-year deal, are you going to be using the good years of the Eric Hosmer deal while you're not very good? And then have the tail end of the Eric Hosmer deal where he's in a decline phase at the point where, if everything goes right, your rebuild has hit full speed.
Even if they were to re-sign Eric Hosmer, even if they were to, say, add some juice to their offense, which is needed because that...
But they don't have a pitching staff to contend.
That's where I'm getting at. There's no pitching. And, you know, Danny Duffy, obviously, hey, he's great. Ian Kennedy and Jason Hamill have... for all intents and purposes, appear to surpass their prime. Hamill's 35, Kennedy's 33. They're only
getting
worse.
Right, but let's just say even that
Jake Junis got a little better. Nate Carnes is coming off for thoracic outlet surgery.
You can hope on Jesse Hahn. You could hope on Trevor Oakes. You could hope on they did Rule 5 picks.
They have two Rule 5 picks currently slated to be on their staff with Birch Smith and Brad Keller, which is always a bad sign when you have two guys.
I would say it's a sign of a team that is rebuilding, and which is what they should be doing.
So that's where for me.
Me and my Rule 5 picks. I'm going to defend them to the death.
That's where for me, you know, Prado and Lee and Matias are all really good prospects. But for me, for the Royals...
No, they're not really good.
Let me rephrase. They're good prospects. You're right. Sorry, my mistake. But for me, what I'm going to be most curious to see if I were a Royals fan is I need to see how these pitchers develop. Josh Stallman, Eric Skoglund, Foster Griffin. These guys who are all higher, they're farther along. Skoglund made his big league debut. Foster, AA. Stallman, AA. To me, that's the more immediate concern. Where I need pitching and I need it both for the short term and the long term. All these guys we've talked about have warts. For you and your just overall assessment of the Royals system, you talked about it's not a great system. It's 29th. They don't have a top 100 prospect. Then you take that into account and realize They don't have a pitcher anywhere in their top three in what's a pretty bad system, all things considered. That's where my biggest concern is for the Royals moving forward is, hey, if all three of their top position guys hit, and when I say hit, I mean hit as big leaguers, and Nicky Lopez comes up and shows, hey, he absolutely is a legit everyday big leaguer like he showed he could be in the fall league. Even if all that happens, they need...
Which, by the way, Nicky Lopez does not have a... I mean, you're now, right now, just again, like some of these moves, I know they didn't spend a whole lot of money to bring Alcides Escobar back, but again, if you are embracing the full rebuild, Alcides Escobar's return means right now you have Alcides Escobar, you have Whit Merrifield at second, you have Raul Mondesi...
Who earned an everyday job,
Merrifield. Who absolutely earned an everyday job, but Raul Mondesi, who... If the Royals are rebuild is going to, you know, like hit any stride anytime soon, Raul Mondesi is the highest upside young guy in the system. You know, he's not prospect eligible anymore, but he's still younger than some of the prospects in this top 30. What my point being though is so I just listed off three middle infielders. Nicky Lopez, again, not that he was probably going to be part of their 2018 plans anyway. But he sure is not now because Escobar kind of ensures that that's not going to happen. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
So the overall point again is even if all these good things happen, they need pitching. They need it in the worst way. I mean, just, you know, you've reported on these guys, Stalmont, Skoglund, Griffin. How reasonably optimistic are you that any of these guys can overcome whatever warts they have and actually become, not just, hey, they're in the big leagues, but they're there, they're staying, they're having a positive impact?
I could see Scott Blewett as a big league starter. There's a chance Foster Griffin. Like, I think it's going to be pretty fine for him that he's going to have to, you know, he's a back end. These are, you know, more back of the rotation starters, but I could see that. Stallman, I've, you know, long believes is probably ends up as a reliever. You know, and we have not had any indication otherwise. Like last year was a step back as far as that, you know, and you get past that. I mean, I do like what they're doing. One of the things that they are doing right now, which is smart, a team in their position should, is I like them going out and getting, I mean, Jesse Hahn, there's a pretty good chance he's not going to be a big guy for them. But at the same time, they have the innings, and if Jesse Hahn comes out and has a good first half for them, he has value to somebody. You know, again, if you're them,
have always been the thing with him. Injuries,
yeah, absolutely. Injuries. But if you're them, I look at if you're them, you should be looking for the Dan Straley's of the world, which obviously the Reds did a couple years ago, and then turned Dan Straley into Luis Castillo, win for the Reds. They should be doing that. They should be going out there because, for one, they have innings to fill. And for two, they have the ability to try to make it work with someone who's, you know, you can call them a post-type, you know, big leaguer, you know, whatever you want to call them. They can spend the time to try to see if they can turn one, two, three of those guys into something. You know, again, I love the Rule 5 pick of Birch Smith.
Rule 5 trade, we should say.
Yes, yeah, but acquisition. Rule 5 acquisition of Birch Smith. Not because I think Birch Smith's going to end up being a number one starter or anything like that, but I think Birch Smith has a pretty good chance of being a useful big leaguer. And, again, at the point they are right now, I mean, I know it's maybe a little frustrating, but if Birch Smith ends up being a useful big leaguer, then it's probably worth turning around and trading him. And because he's had injury problems as well, cashing out the value on that and then going into, because, you know, I really feel like if you're the Royals right now, your future plan is kind of focused on 2021, 2022, 2023, because I do think it's going to take some time. This is a team that's been successful, that's been drafting late, and also, you know, just does not have, I mean, they've pushed payroll. Payroll's going to come back down. Now, they don't have a wave right now. The last time what they did is they had this wave. I still feel like it's going to be interesting to see what they do in the draft because, as you said, they've had some misses in recent years. I really like their 2017 draft, but I look at it and say, okay, last year was high school. They went, you know, high school first rounder.
Prado, Melendez.
They went high school. And that's on the heels of their best prospect they got out of the draft before that, Khalil Lee, high school. So those guys are, you know, we're talking about They're in low A. They're going to be in low A. They're going to be in high A. When the Royals did this the last time, what they did was they went high school, high school, high school. And then as those guys kind of reached high A, then they went and they flipped over, they flipped the switch, and they went college, college, college. And the idea being...
Everyone gets there together.
Everyone gets there together. Now, the college, you know, the college guys, some of that worked out, some of it didn't. Kyle Zimmer's injuries is, you know, is one of those what may have been, you know, for the... And, I mean, he's still in the system, but, you know, you do wonder what, you know, because he was a 2012 draft pick. But I still feel like if they follow the same pattern, they're in the high school phase still. They're not in any way yet in the let's go out and get college bats who will be ready quicker. Now, that doesn't mean they have to follow the same model. To me, again, every draft you look at it and say, let's get the best guy available, and that very well may be a college guy. But if you're, again, if they're following their plan that they used before, they're still in the high school acquisition phase.
You know, you mentioned the wave. Really, the wave where it would come from would be a lot of the young guys they acquired who are fairly famous names and just haven't performed. Raul Mondesi, Jorge Soler. You know, Jorge Bonifacio did okay last year. Mm-hmm. Wasn't terrible, wasn't great, did a little better. Soler will be, he's, you know, about to be 26. Mondesi's still in his early 20s. If Mondesi, Soler, Jorge Bonifacio, and Lord, maybe even Hunter Dozier all come together and it clicks for them, they're all, you know, and they're still mid-20s and mm-hmm. lower, that, to me, is the wave that they can hope for.
That wave will never win you a World Series.
There's a shortage of talent that's going to take time to repair. That's the hard truth.
Right, the hard truth of it. And again, another guy I'll throw in there, like Scott Barlow, who they acquired, and
Dodgers reliever.
Scott Barlow is the kind of guys, these are the kind of guys that you should be acquiring if you're the Royals right now. Because you have opportunities for those guys and other teams do not. And so, and also, that's a sales pitch you have. Hey, we have innings. They're there. I mean, you know, but the other thing that, again, that I'm kind of interested to see going forward here is the Royals, the last time they rebuilt, one of the things they were proud about was, and again, it was a different system, but they were proud about that their rock bottom under Dayton Moore did not last very long. Now, they were not very good, but they actually, under the old system, they really strived to work hard to not be the worst team in baseball. Okay? Well, nowadays, you know, again, some of these moves, if they re-sign Hosmer to go with, and again, you know, again, Escobar is a minor deal, but re-sign Hosmer to go with, you know, Perez, to still have Gordon, if they don't trade Kelvin Herrera, if they don't trade Danny Duffy, they've got the pieces to avoid being one of the worst teams in baseball. They do. I mean, they're not going to be great. I don't see them. I don't see how they're a playoff contender in any way. But at the same time, they have the pieces to be that 75-win team, not the 60-win team. And in some ways, credit to them on that, because that means you won more games. But the incentives of the system that they're playing in right now, for good or bad, incentivize winning 60 games instead of 75. And that, to me, there's a little bit of signs that maybe they're, you know, headed towards 75.
They very well could be. Getting into the physical mm-hmm. prospects themselves, Nick Prado is number one in this system. Mm-hmm. I think that was fairly straightforward. You know, high draft pick. This is a guy who's tremendous pedigree, Little League World Series, Team USA, played in all the big showcases for Huntington Beach High School, perennial power in Southern California, performed both as a pitcher and as a hitter. You know, to me, this wasn't as much of a normal high school pick. This was an advanced high school pick. You know, mm-hmm. I had Southern California draft coverage last year, and everyone talked about, you know, he's so polished, he's so just so smooth in everything he does. He's mature, he gets it, he has the work ethic, which a lot of scouts don't feel that way about most high school kids. The interesting comps I got on him were more of the older school first baseman. One I personally liked was Wally Joyner. This is a guy who's hit over power, really good defender. You know, he's not going to go hit 40 bombs for you and you're going to stick in the middle of your order and say, you know, go hit us a home run title with a bunch of swing and miss. That's not him.
No.
But Wally Joyner, former Royal, by the way, mm-hmm. for a little bit. You know, if you can get a solid average, you know, guy who makes an all-star game or two, in Wally's case, one, You can win with that. You know, again, I think back to Joyner was, you know, first baseman on a World Series team, made an All-Star game, had a long career, was, you know, a successful big leaguer, if not a bona fide All-Star. I mean, that's kind of the perception of Nick Prado, and when you get your prospect handbook, you'll see the grade on him is, you know, that first division regular, not, you know, much of an All-Star ceiling, but still a good player to have. Just what's been your perception of Prado? He didn't rake when he went out to the Arizona League, but first year after signing, you never want to kill him after that.
No, I think you summed it up pretty well. One thing I would say is this, like, if we do our, you know, best draft tools and all, and we didn't have for pitchers, we have best fastball, best secondary pitch. If there had been a best control category for the Royals draft, I would have also thrown Nick Prado's control. You know, he was a two-way guy in high school. He's going to be a hitter all the way going forward, but he was a legit two-way guy.
Unless it goes sideways, there is potential on the mound. Right. But you want to draft.
We're not talking about, like, I mean, this is not Hunter Green two-way. This is,
right.
He was everyone thought of him as better as a hitter than they did as a pitcher.
Correct.
There wasn't a lot of debate about that. But no, I mean, he's, you know, the thing with a guy like Prado that you get over, you know, what we were talking about high school, the risk of high school players many years ago, scouts have seen Nick Prado in competitive at-bats against top-level competition for literally hundreds of at-bats before he became a pro. I mean, that's something. It was Huntington Beach, which that right there, yeah. You know, they compete against top-level competition. He was on the showcase circuit. You know,
Team USA. Team USA. Captain of Team USA.
Right. All these things. So he is. He is an advanced high school hitter. And you really look at it. And
really good defender at first.
Yeah. I mean, really good defender at first. And you just look at it and you say, okay, this is the kind of guy. Now, again, pure ceiling, this is not the highest ceiling first baseman you're going to see. Because, as you said, there's power there, and there's potential for power to be more because, again, if you get a hitter who can really hit and there's some strength there, the power could come along with it. But he is, he's always been thought of as a hitter who also hits for power, not the other way around. But, again, like, yeah, I mean, if you are talking about the next wave for the Royals, if you told me Nick Prado, who again, part of the reason we can say this is because they're further away, so we've seen less of their work so far. But if you told me Nick Prado and MJ Melendez are part of the next wave, no, I could see that being, these are guys who you're like, okay, you need a lot of other guys around them, but these are guys who could be core type guys. You know, now, obviously, if you're a Royals fan, the question is going to become, you know, how much does this guy like Eric Hosmer? You know, I will point out Eric Hosmer went a good bit earlier in the draft. You know, so Prado, again, one of the better high school bats in that draft class. And, yeah, I mean, you expect him to go to low A, and you expect him to hit. Now, if he does not hit this year, then you start to have a little worries. Because, again, he didn't have a great, you know, pro debut. You write that off. It was the AZL first season. He had, you know, long year, whatever. You expect him to go to the Midwest League this year and hit pretty well because – he should be more advanced than a lot of the guys that he's facing.
I will say one of the things that I've learned is if he has a slow, bad first month,
that's like
Southern California, right. It's freezing.
Right, that's fine. If the end of September, it's like he never really got it going. You know, Mike Moustakas was terrible in April.
Chatsworth guy. Yep.
You know,
Southern California.
He was terrible in April. By the end
well.
Of the year, he had a great year in low A. Yeah. I'm not saying like be focused on.
No, I'm blaming.
But
the listeners know.
But yeah. But Prado's over hitting, the course of the season, he should have good season.
The number two prospect on here is Khalil Lee, and this is a guy who there's so many. He does this well, but there's a but. On the one hand, 17 homers, 20 stolen bases, you know, shot power, you know, 24 doubles, 6 triples, 17 homers, 20 steals. You see the power-speed combo. He's 19 years old, low A. The but is a 32% strikeout rate. He was thrown out almost as much as he was successful stealing base. And as much as we talk about, you know, at the big league level, batting average not being that important, it's indicative at the lower levels. If a guy's hitting 237 in low A,
oh, he's got to hit better than that.
It's a red flag, and with a 32% strikeout rate. I mean,
although I do like the fact that he also drew his walks as well. So No, I think, yeah, he has work to do. At the same time, that 17 home runs for a guy who has some athleticism in the outfield and can really run, there are some really good building blocks there. Now, like, we're going to get to Sully Matias after that. Yeah. Same strikeout concerns, but I'm more concerned about the strikeouts when you don't walk at all. And Sully does not walk at the rate that that Khalil Lee does. No, Khalil Lee, again, when we talk about guys who could be cornerstone guys for them, Khalil Lee has a chance to do that. I mean, he strikes out too much, but like to compare him, he's not the defender that Bubba Starling was when he was coming up. But that being said, I'm way more comfortable about Khalil Lee's field of hit and the ability to raise that batting average next year than I was about Bubba. Because
That's good, because Bubba Starling had zero.
Right, but there's more field of hit there. You know, and again, power, speed, ability to draw walks. He hit .237 last year. He had a .344 OBP. Now, again, he's got to raise that average up, because if he doesn't, the hit tool's just not going to be there to be a big leaguer. But if he does, well, then all of a sudden you're talking about, you've got the building blocks of a guy who's a high OBP guy with power who can run and give you solid defense in the outfield. Well, then that's a cornerstone type player.
I think there's, see, you're a little higher. I see this guy. I see a guy who, if things start to click, definitely useful. Cornerstone to me is a little heavy, but there's skills.
All he has to do, I'm serious, like, because I think that with the power he has, and again, I'm not talking about the speed as in stealing bases, but the speed as in base running, defense, all that. If you're a guy, again, if he just improved the hit tool, if he can start, you know, if you're a guy who can be posting those 370, 380 OBPs, which is within his power with a better hit tool, well, again, and I don't have really much concern about there being enough power there to go with it. You're talking about a guy who, again, maybe cornerstone's a little much, but who's every bit of, I mean, really, I'm not saying he's this good. That's the Alex Gordon starter set. Alex Gordon is not a massive power guy.
But there's a lot better field to hit, even from, I mean, when he came up from Nebraska, there was way more.
Well, I mean, he also was, yes, but he was also 2 years, again, and I'm not saying he's going to be Alex Gordon, but what I'm saying is that if you look at what I'm really trying to describe is Alex Gordon, and please do not look at Alex Gordon's stats from last year and say, Alex Gordon at his peak was a excellent defensive corner who posted high OBPs and hit for power, but we're not talking 35 homers or anything. We're talking a lot of doubles and some home runs, but can be very useful because
20, 14, 19,
right. 13. No, you know, and what, I mean, like slugging like what, you know, 490, 500?
A lot of 455.
Right.
420.
So that's what I'm saying is that's within Khalil Lee's, you know, striking range with improvement. Now, a lot of guys who have this, you know, the strikeout concerns that we're talking about never get there. But that's within, like you say, the range of possibility for him. It's within the range of possibility.
You know, you mentioned strikeouts. And Sully Matias is a guy that you talk to scouts who went to Burlington last year, and a lot of positive reviews. Mm-hmm. Love the way he looks. You know, this is a guy who got big money coming out when he was an international amateur. Led the Arizona League in home runs in 2016. So there's pedigree there. It's not like he's you know, came out mm-hmm. of nowhere. At the same time, you know, you see 243, you know, 243, 297, 423, plenty of power, 72 strikeouts. It was about 29% strikeout rate. Physical, raw. I think there's a sense this guy could have the most upside in the system, but he also could completely bust out. There's a we talk about a wide range of possibilities. He seems to be the widest.
We mentioned Jorge Soler. That's the cautionary tale. Tools wise, there's a lot of similarities there. Big power, legit right fielder, all that. But the Soler, if Soler is going to help their big league club, he's going to have to be more selective. That's just the simple reality of it. Now, Sully is a good bit further away, but if he's going to help their big league club, he's going to have to be more selective. I mean, it's the same thing for both of them, and it is. Yeah, it's a wide range, because if it all comes together, he's number one of these guys. I mean, I don't think it's a question.
And I think the thing that's, you know, scary maybe for Royals fans, if we talk about Jorge Soler and his selectivity issues, again, he was older. It's a different – he came over from Cuba. It's a different situation. But in the minors, he was a great strikeout-to-walk guy. You know, he was 38 walks to 48 strikeouts, 21 walks to 38 strikeouts. So, I mean, there was selectivity, and then he got to the majors, and it fell apart. But he was already further ahead selectivity-wise. Right. So true. I think that's where there's – you know, so again,
it is strange with Soler, because it was true. Like, there was a point where it seemed like he had checked that box, and it really has regressed.
Big league pitching is hard to face.
Yep.
It exposes a lot of things that the minor leaguers don't. So I see those top three, and I see, you know, three guys who you can see good things happening. You can also see it stagnating.
I mean, why they're not top 100 guys.
Then you get into, you know Josh Stallman. How much faith do you have in him? You know,
more than you, I'll say that.
Okay.
Because
what is your reason for the faith?
Again, we've seen so many times, take the guy with serious control problems, but absolutely legit stuff, put him in the pen, and a lot of the times, they end up very useful. A lot of the times. Again, he's not the body type of Dellin Betances, and I'm not saying he's as good as Dellin, but his stuff, and I'll say this, fastball-wise, his fastball is every bit as good as Dellin Betances' fastball when he's on. Like, I have gotten that his fastball, when he's on, when he's not even throwing strikes, but around the zone, you've seen 100-plus. He does that relatively easy, and the fastball has some life. So, but he is not throwing nearly enough strikes for that to matter so far. And you do come to a point... And again, if you're the Royals right now, you don't really even have a reason to give up on the starting experiment yet. But you do come to a point at some point, and really what's that point generally? In Dellin Betances' case, that point came when he ran out of options, I believe. And where you say, okay, we've got to put you in the pen because you can't stick on the rotation. I think that's what Josh Stallman's going to end up doing.
I think he has to. And even so here's the thing. It's beyond just the walks, right? So we talk about the guys who have control issues. They move to the pen, they're better. Those are guys with walks per nines of 5. He's at 7.3 for his career. Well, but beyond that, you have the walks. You also have, so last year, 97 walks, 12 hit-by-pitches, 15 wild pitches.
Oh, yeah. No, his control is near the bottom of the – I mean
– And in order to succeed in the majors, you've got to throw strikes. It's not –
No. So that's in the pen – you have to be around the zone.
So Dellin Betances' minors walks per nine was 4.9. Josh Stallman's is 7.3.
For his career?
Josh Stallman's career minors.
What was Dellin Betances' worst season?
Dellin Betances' worst season in terms of walks per nine.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like there's a 6.8 was his worst.
Okay.
And well, in this last year in the majors, when everything fell apart, it was 6.6.
Right.
So 6.8 was so, but Dellin Betances' worst season is still better than Josh Stallman's entire career.
But again, to give you an example, to give you a more contemporary example also, Cal Crick. Cal Crick could not throw strikes. I mean, big arm, big arm, but was at one point looked like he was buried in the Giants farm system because he couldn't throw strikes. They move him to the pen, and Cal Crick, in the span of about 2.5 months, turns into a useful, who still didn't throw strikes, was around the zone enough, and his fastball was good enough. But to be a useful enough reliever, now again, does this mean Cal Crick has not demonstrated yet that he is a dominating reliever, but enough that he had some big league success, and he was valuable enough to be traded in the Evan Longoria deal.
And that's where I think there's a best case scenario. And here's just what scares me. This isn't me criticizing the comp. Here's what scares me for Kyle Crick's issues. And there were many, and they were visible. Career walks per nine, the minors was 6. Stallman's at 7.3.
But at the same time, for me,
it's so bad, I question whether or not he can stick in the major leagues in any capacity, bullpen or not. That's my concern.
No, it's absolutely an absolutely... legitimate concern. There's no way to hide it. I mean, there's no way to if you're the Royals, they will tell you, yes, he has to throw more strikes or it's not going to matter.
All right. So here's we've talked about their three main position guys. You know, Skoglund got up. We know MJ Melendez is promising. Is there is there a guy further down this list that you say, you know, even though he's ranked in the middle tier of a poor system, there's someone here that has something I like?
Oh yes. Oh yes.
Mabrys Veloria?
No.
No?
Another one of my.
Okay.
Richard Lovelady.
Yes. So you saw Lovelady a little bit this past year. What can we give the Royals fans hope for? Because I feel like we haven't preached a lot of hope.
Who is in the 30. He's a reliever. He's already a reliever. He's a lefty reliever. He's a lower slot guy. So there is no real consideration that this guy's going to start. Let's just, we're talking about a lefty reliever. Okay, so why am I excited about Richard Lovelady? I saw him, literally fifth pitch out of his hand, and I'm like tweeting, this is a big leaguer. Yeah. I have zero question.
Big leaguer is a big leaguer, and every team needs good lefty specialists. Every team.
He is a lower slot with a legit fastball and enough, he has enough stuff to get right-handers out enough that he's not just, this is not a guy who has to be, he made 72 appearances and threw 41 innings last year. He has a chance to be more than that. But it's now stuff. The slot makes it deceptive. There's enough movement on the fastball. You can work it kind of in and out. There is enough there right now. Now, again, you hope that there's going to be further improvement. But there's enough there right now to say that this guy could get big league, could again. Right now, he probably is a lefty matchup guy. He could get lefties out. Okay. Which, again, there's value to that. Yeah, I love the Rule 5 draft.
But also, if you can get him to be that guy who can last a whole inning, deal with righties and lefties. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's a chance to do that. But, again, the thing that does start with is that if you're a left-handed hitter, for one, there are not many lefty sidearm, call him really low three-quarter. I mean, he's not a Chad Bradford knuckle scrape or anything like that. But you don't see that slot very often.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And you sure don't see that slot, and it's coming in 93, 94, 95, which he can do. So you put the two together.
And he controls it well.
Yes.
2.6 walks per nine. I mean, yeah.
So you put it all together, and you say, there really is something here. Now, again, he's not in the top 10 for the reason, which is lefty relievers who are not going to close, making a top 30 is a pretty good accomplishment because there is a limit to the impact that you can make. But, it is something where you look at him and you say, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him pitching in Kansas City in 2018. And by the way,
he's a non-roster invited to camp. He has a chance to make a big
impression.
And
by the way, as a point, because everyone loves to say, man, they're when he was a non-roster invitee, they were saying, look, Dick Lovelady is coming to camp. It's Richard. It's Richard. I've talked to him specifically. It's Richard.
Yeah, that would be too good to be true or too bad to be true. I think that'll about do it for this Royals podcast. Sorry to depress you, Royals fans.
Royals fans are realistic about it. And by the way,
it was worth it.
You know what? I was going to say, if you're depressed,
absolutely worth it.
If you're depressed,
look at
pop
the two
in,
flags.
Yeah, put in the DVR, fire it up. I promise you, none of you have deleted it. It's still there. And so you fire it up and go, Mets Royals World Series. Let me watch this again.
This was fun. Let's relive this.
You can do that for, I mean,
for three years and come out and then come out
and
take a look.
For many a year. I mean, again, if you're a Royals fan who's gone through this, you went through decades where you're like, can we have a year where we're competitive? And so
I remember when they were so excited when they finished above 500 in 2003. They won 83 games, and I had one random Royals fan friend, and he was ecstatic.
Oh, yeah. So, again, especially to have the second one, the one where they won it, because even if it had ended up being those Game 7 loss to the Giants, that was a gallant, that's a team that you take the memories and you go, wow, there was so much good.
From the A's wild card win to sweeping the Angels.
But,
all
that.
Of it.
But then to have the next year where they did win it, it's like, okay, you are on house money for years to come.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's all good. Just remember that. Thanks for listening, everyone. For JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. Have a good one.